Welcome to Legalese, a weekly show dedicated to upbeat topics, stories of adventure, and legal talk, offering words of wisdom in and out of the courtroom. Now, here's your host, criminal defense attorney and lifelong adventurer, Mike Chastain.
And good morning, Sacramento. Welcome to Legalese. If you thought you were turning into the Legal Hour with Mike Chastain, well, you're on the right channel. We've changed the name to try to reflect more about what we talk about and how our show has been presented. You know, while we talk about the law and some of the things that are going on in the law, we also talk about an awful lot of other things. And we're trying to simplify some of this information so that it's more useful to you on a day-to-day basis. So you're in the right place. And as usual, if you're stuck in the morning traffic, everybody just take a deep breath, relax, give everyone a little space, and we'll all get to work on time in a good mood and be productive today. So as I've indicated, I'm Mike Chastain. We have rebranded and changed the name of the show to Legalese. But the one thing that hasn't changed is I'm here with the amazing E this morning. Good morning, E.
Well, good morning, Mike.
So I think we have a great show this morning. We have a special guest, Emily Smith, who is calling in from Boston.
She, I like the way you said that, Boston. You got Boston.
Yeah, Pac-Macan, Harvard Yard. She's going to be joining us in a few minutes. She's an employment attorney, and she's going to be talking about the three top misunderstandings for employees and the three top misunderstandings for employers. So a very timely and important topic that we're going to be digging into. But before we got there, I did want to talk about a couple of Supreme Court decisions that came down that I think are very important. The first one is South Dakota versus Wayfair, which basically has opened the door for state governments to levy sales tax on e-commerce, even if the place that you're buying your widget or your book or whatever it is that you're buying doesn't actually physically have a presence in your state. So, in other words, what has been happening over the years is if you ordered whatever, you know, some product from, you know, Montana, somebody's making whatever, there was always a question of whether the state of California could charge sales tax for the purchase of that item because that business physically wasn't here in California. Now under South Dakota versus Wayfair, they can. Now it'll be up to the states to make those determinations and how are they going to collect. I mean, there's going to be lots of different issues with that, but at least now we have some clarification from the Supreme Court that the states can do that. Interestingly, it was a 5-4 decision, as so many of them are, but the four conservative judges voting in favor of it, the judge who came over from the more liberal side was Justice Ginsburg. The other decision that I think is really important is Carpenter versus U.S. Now, this was another 5-4 decision, and this was authored by Chief Justice Roberts. But basically what it says is that the police have to get a search warrant before they can obtain the cell phone location data. Now, as many of you may or may not know, several years ago there were two decisions, Riley versus California and U.S. versus Ware, that had said that if the police stop you and they seize your cell phone, they cannot search your cell phone without a search warrant, with the exception of some limited emergency situations, they can't go into to your cell phone. You know, the Fourth Amendment basically says that, you know, you are supposed to be free of having your papers, and this is the terminology that was used in the Constitution, having your papers seized and searched by the government without a warrant. Well, nowadays in the digital age, we don't carry around our papers, but in our cell phone, we have this amazing device that accesses virtually everything, all the bank records, medical records, contacts, phone books, mail. You know, your email would have been like your written correspondence back in the day. And the Supreme Court unanimously said, look, the police just can't go rummaging through your papers via your cell phone without a search warrant. This has expanded that to a certain extent because, as you may or may not know, when you have your cell phone with you, you're being tracked 24/7. So with that cell phone, unless you've taken some real interesting precautions, cell phone towers track exactly where you are all day long. And the question was, can the police obtain the location, your location, by way of the cell phone location data, which is being kept by Verizon and Sprint and whatnot, without a search warrant? And the answer to that in this 5-4 decision was no, they can't. They have to go get a search warrant in order to basically track you and figure out where you were. So it doesn't mean that the police can never get it. It simply means that they have to go to the court with proper justification. So in other words, if you're pulled over for, you know, a traffic violation, they can't just start running, well, you know, where has E been all day? So
everybody wants to know that.
Yeah.
E wants to know that too.
Inquiring minds want to know. But in order to do that, they have to go through the process of applying for a search warrant and getting a judge to say, yes, there is probable cause of criminal behavior. They can't just get that information because they're curious. There has to be actual articulable probable cause that you were involved in criminal behavior. So that is the roundup for the Supreme Court. They're still in session. There's a number of decisions that are still going to be coming down over the next week or so. Some having to do with unions, some having to do with the travel ban that's going on, some having to do with pregnancy centers and what can they do, and some gerrymandering decisions that may be coming up. So there's still a number of things that will be decisions that will be coming down over the next couple weeks that will be pretty important before the Supreme Court goes into its summer session. So interesting. Everyone's up to date now on where the Supreme Court stands today. We're going to be taking a break here in just a minute. When we come back, we are going to be talking to Emily Smith, an employment lawyer from Boston, Massachusetts, to talk about the top three misunderstandings for employees and the top three misunderstandings for employers.
Being accused of a crime is not to be taken lightly. Being accused of a crime is a big deal. It doesn't matter if you're innocent or if you're guilty. There's just too much at stake for you and your loved ones. Hi, I'm Mike Chastain of the Chastain Law Office, and I've been practicing criminal defense for over 32 years, and I know what I'm talking about. My advice is don't take any chances. Before you do anything else, call me for a free consultation. We will discuss what happened and review your options. You need to know your choices so you can feel confident making the right decision. I take your concerns and your life seriously, and I want you to have the best possible outcome. Don't waste any time. Call me today for a free consultation. Call 916-932-7150. That's 932-7150. Or visit us at ChastainLaw.com. That's ChastainLaw.com for your free consultation. Let the Chastain Law Office show you the way forward. When my clients get arrested for a DUI, I want the best possible outcome for them. I always recommend the top resources available to help minimize the penalties and costs. That's why I send my clients to Your DUI Solutions, because I believe they're the best. Hi, I'm Mike Chastain, a 32-year veteran of criminal defense. If you get arrested for a DUI, don't call your insurance company. Instead, call Your DUI Solutions and avoid either getting dropped or having your rates go up significantly. DUI forgiveness can be real. You don't have to pay outrageous insurance rates for your DUI conviction. At Your DUI Solutions, they provide instant electronic SR-22s, interlock device installations, and DUI program enrollment assistance. Your DUI Solutions is there to make sure everyone is taken care of every step of the way. Visit them at yourduisolutions.com. That's yourduisolutions.com and find out how they can save you money.
Law, life, adventure. Legalese with Mike Chastain. KSAT, Money 105.5.
Did we lose her, Frank?
And good morning, Sacramento. Welcome to Legalese with Mike Chastain. We're so glad that you're joining us. If you thought that you were tuning into the Legal Hour with Mike Chastain, well, you're in the right place. We've just changed the name to sort of reflect the content of what we've been presenting. So we have a great show this morning. We are going to be talking with Emily Smith. She's a 22-year veteran of employment law. She's talking to us from Boston, Massachusetts. Good morning, Emily.
Morning, Mike. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you today?
Doing well.
Excellent. Well, thank you for joining us today. Would you tell us just a little bit about your background and how you got involved in employment law?
Sure, and thank you for having me. So I've been practicing 22 years. I started my own practice about 9 years ago. And really responded to the need. The people who called us were almost always having employment problems. So we sort of started a practice with a focus on employment law. Unlike a lot of employment law firms, we actually do both plaintiff's work and defense work. So we work with employees who are wondering about whether their terminations were lawful, employees who are wondering about whether they've been paid properly, employees with non-compete agreements, but also helping a lot of small businesses try to understand, you know, how to do the right thing in the first place so they don't end up meeting somebody like me down the road.
Well, I don't know about meeting somebody like you. We like you a lot, but just as a friend.
Not in the courtroom.
Exactly.
Yeah. Right. So, excellent. So we were going to be talking today, kind of the subject that we wanted to go over were the top three misunderstandings of employers and the top three misunderstandings for employees. So why don't we start with the employees? What are the concerns or the top misunderstandings that employees may have regarding employment law?
Sure. You know, and spoiler alert, the misunderstandings are kind of the same in a lot of situations on the employee and employer side. A big misunderstanding that employees have is about what is a hostile work environment as it relates to the law. You know, in most places, unless you've got a state law to the contrary, employment is at will. A hostile work environment, your work environment can be genuinely, truly hostile in the sense that people are toxic or bullying or treating each other poorly. It's only actionable, though, if that hostility is rooted in discrimination, specifically sexual harassment, harassment based on race or other protected class. So we get a lot of calls from people who say, I'm in a hostile work environment, and they are absolutely right, but it's a really small subset of situations that the law really addresses. Another very common misunderstanding among employees is that there's some requirement that the employers do progressive discipline, that they issue a warning before termination, that they give the employee some ability to correct their action. There's a lot of good reasons for employers to do that, but generally it is not required. And then the other misunderstanding, which falls a little bit on the employer side as well, is that just because you have a salary, just because you're paid on a salary, doesn't necessarily make you exempt from overtime laws. So there's a lot to talk about in each of those, but I would ping those as my top three.
Okay. So let's talk about the hostile work environment, because I think that that's a pretty
timely
issue. So and let's just put into the parking lot for a second the sexual harassment component. So basically, if I'm understanding what you're saying, just because your boss is a jerk doesn't mean that it is a hostile work environment.
Legally.
Yeah.
Okay. You may not want to work there, and it may be time for you to dust off your resume. But as far as any sort of legal action, the fact that your boss, you know, stomps around or is impolite or is rude even, doesn't technically make it legally a hostile work environment. Am I getting that right?
That's right. And you know, the more sort of trying and painful stories we hear is not just the boss stomping around and being a jerk, but somebody really truly being singled out and treated badly. And you kind of have to make sure you understand whether they're being treated badly because of a discriminatory feeling or if somebody, if there's just a personality conflict.
How do you go about that, Emily, finding, you know, figuring out if, because it could be not just the boss, it could be a coworker, correct?
Yeah.
How do you even go about figuring out, like, what is their motivation for that? Do you try to look at patterns in the past, or what's your, how do you figure that out?
Yeah, I mean, going up a level of elevation here, in discrimination cases generally, you know, where it plays out is the employer puts forth a legitimate non-discriminatory reason for what they did, whatever it was, and the employee has to show that that's a pretext or an excuse, in more layman's terms. In trying a case like that, the pretext is where it all plays out, and you are absolutely looking for patterns. If everybody that the employer does a certain thing to is a certain race, gender, national origin, if the people who don't look like them are treated differently. But it's very hard to prove. Discrimination is a lot subtler than it used to be. And at the end of the day, you're trying to prove what was in somebody else's head.
And which sometimes people don't know what's in their own head is the problem, too.
Right.
So
right.
There's always that.
So the basic defense for the employer is I'm just a jerk to everybody. And it doesn't matter who you are. That's just who I am. That would actually constitute a defense in that situation.
On a hostile work environment claim? Yeah.
Yeah. So while you're probably not going to have a particularly good work environment or have productive employees, from that perspective, it does protect them legally. So,
yeah, I mean, I will say, just slipping over to the employer side for 2 seconds, there is a chapter in my book called Just Because It's Legal Doesn't Mean It Won't Get You Sued. People who really treat their employees badly, those are the employees who call people like me to try to figure out if they have a claim.
Okay. So tell us a little bit about your book. We kind of skipped right over that.
Sure. It's a primarily focused on Massachusetts law, but most of the issues have corollaries either in federal law or parallels in state law. It's called Rules of the Road, What You Need to Know About Massachusetts Employment Law. And it's meant to cover at a high level, you know, the 7 or 8 issues that we see coming up over and over and over again. Really meant both for employers and employees, with the idea that if everybody knows the rules of the road, the people who are trying to do the right thing will stay out of court, and people who have something wrong done to them will know their rights.
So is the federal law broader than most state laws, or do they seem to mirror each other? How does that work?
It depends on the subject and on the state. The federal discrimination laws are sometimes more favorable and sometimes less favorable than the state laws, but they tend to be kind of in the same zip code for age discrimination, race, gender, national origin. States like Massachusetts go a few steps further. For example, sexual orientation is not a protected class under federal law, but it is under Massachusetts law. Wage and hour, Fair Labor Standards Act, the federal minimum wage is lower than many states. But it sets the floor no matter where you are.
Interesting. So because they seem to parallel each other, do you get an option of what court you want to file an action in?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, with the caveat, just to geek out a little, that if you're suing, you can always choose to sue in state court. If you're also asserting federal claims, the defendant has the option to pull it into federal court. But if you're asserting federal claims, you can go straight to federal court yourself if you'd like.
Interesting. Okay, so we're at the bottom of the hour, so we're going to have to take a break here. When we come back, we're going to continue to talk with Emily Smith, and we're going to dive into sexual harassment and how that plays out in the workforce. We'll be right back.
When it comes to retirement, a lot of folks don't even know where to start. And it's easy to be overwhelmed and confused by all the information out there. Don't let that happen to you. Join Jeff Mitchell, the president of Monolith Financial Group, every Saturday morning at 10 for the Monolith Money Show to discover the strategies you need to know to have a happy and comfortable retirement. Start your journey into retirement with the Monolith Money Show, featuring Jeff Mitchell every Saturday morning at 10 on Money 105.5.
Are you tired of feeling sick and tired? Are you looking for more natural, drug-free solutions for common healthcare issues for you and your family? My name is Dr. Tim Smith, and I am the host of Family Health Solutions Radio Show here on Money 105.5. Every Monday from 2 to 3 p.m., we are talking about natural preventative health solutions for the entire family. Make sure to join us every week, 2 to 3 p.m., here on Money 105.5 and help improve the health of your family.
Fridays at 2. Lock it into Money 105.5 for the Rush Hour for Success. It's a show dedicated to your success. With information about what's going on in the community, reviews of places to visit around Sacramento, and of course, topics that involve experts in money strategies, business, real estate, and things that matter most in life. Join the watch star himself, Jim T. Chan. Get entertained, get educated, and get with a rush for success. Fridays at 2 on Money 105.5.
Oh, yeah. The Project Grow Radio Show, a passionate millennial's perspective and advice on faith, marketing, leadership, and technology. In a world that's quickly advancing, we bring you exciting interviews from today's top entrepreneurs and leaders, fueling your growth in life and business. Project Grow Radio Show, hosted by Adrian Boysell, every Wednesday and Saturday at 11 a.m. Or listen from your smartphone by downloading the Money 105.5 FM app.
You have been working your whole life to provide for your family and so you can enjoy your retirement. Make sure your wealth and family are protected. I'm attorney Eric Meyer. I am a partner at Meyer Law Offices and host of the Wealth and Family Show. Join us right here every Sunday at noon where we talk about just that, how to build and protect your wealth and family. Be confident everything you have worked hard for and what matters most, your family, are protected. I look forward to talking with you this Sunday at noon. Straight talk and to the point. This is personal. This is family. This is the Wealth and Family Show.
If your appliance is broke, shop Valio. ValioCompliance.com. ValioCompliance.com.
Valioc Appliance.
Whirlpool.
Offers the brand names you know.
Amana.
At prices that'll make you
happy.
Selling the best.
Jenner.
And servicing the rest in Greater Sacramento since 1990.
KitchenAid.
Visit Valioc Appliance.
Maytag.
At
ValioCompliance.com. ValioCompliance.com.
Have you been arrested for a DUI? You can expect your mailbox to be full of advertisements. Figuring out what to do next can be very confusing. It's a high-stress situation, and your future is at stake. Don't make a mistake. Hi, I'm Mike Chastain, and I've been helping people through this difficult process for over 32 years. Take the first step and call me for a free consultation. I'll help you to understand all of your options, and whether you hire us or not, you should feel confident in making the right decision on how to move forward. Every year, the Chastain Law Office helps hundreds of people just like you to get through this difficult experience. Don't get lost in all the confusing advertising. Your choice is easy. Give me a call and let me show you the way through this nightmare. Call us at 916-932-7150. That's 932-7150. Or you can visit us on our website at ChastainLaw.com. That's ChastainLaw.com. Contact us for your free consultation. Let the Chastain Law Office show you the way forward. When my clients get arrested for a DUI, I want the best possible outcome for them. I always recommend the top resources available to help minimize the penalties and costs. That's why I send my clients to Your DUI Solutions, because I believe they're the best. Hi, I'm Mike Chastain, a 32-year veteran of criminal defense. If you get arrested for a DUI, don't call your insurance company. Instead, call Your DUI Solutions and avoid either getting dropped or having your rates go up significantly. DUI forgiveness can be real. You don't have to pay outrageous insurance rates for your DUI conviction. At Your DUI Solutions, they provide instant electronic SR-22s, interlock device installations, and DUI program enrollment assistance. Your DUI Solutions is there to make sure everyone is taken care of every step of the way. Visit them at yourduisolutions.com. That's yourduisolutions.com, and find out how they can save you money.
a cup of coffee, and legalese with Mike Chastain. Monday mornings at 8 on KSAC, Money 105.5 FM.
And good morning, Sacramento. Welcome to Legalese with Mike Chastain. If you think you're tuning in to the Legal Hour with Mike Chastain, well, you're in the right place. We've just changed the name to better reflect kind of the branding in the show that we're trying to present today. We have as a guest on the show today, Emily Smith. She's an employment lawyer from Boston, Massachusetts, and she's been talking to us about the top misunderstandings that employees and employers have when they have employees. So thank you for joining us today, Emily. We appreciate you being here.
Sure thing. Thanks for having me.
So let's dive into the topic that I think most people would be more concerned about, and that is sexual discrimination. We talked a little bit about hostile work environment and what that is as far as the law is concerned. But with the Me Too movement and a lot of the things that are going on in the press nowadays, sexual discrimination is a big event, or a big concern.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, just as a mark of the rate of evolution of this issue, sexual harassment was not actually clearly against the law until 1991.
Wow, really?
Yep. So, yep, there were at that time, and it's really kind of amazing to look back at that given everything that's in the ether today. There were some courts that found their way to finding that sexual harassment was a form of discrimination, but it wasn't codified until 1991. And do you guys remember what else happened in 1991?
No, you've put us on the spot.
The Clarence Hill hearings with Anita Thomas.
Ah, okay. So
in a way, sort of just like the Me Too movement is one kind of seminal moment in people's awareness of these issues, that was an earlier but very, very powerful one. And shortly thereafter, the federal statutes were amended.
Have you seen a difference in your practice, Emily, since the Me Too movement?
Honestly, I have not. I have heard that, which is what's interesting about the Me Too movement. As an employment lawyer, fielding intake calls from people, I've been hearing these stories for years.
So, yeah, nothing new to you then with that.
Right.
Could you describe a little bit of, like, what would you say the definition of sexual harassment in the workplace? Like, when is it a problem?
So there are two kinds. These things come in flavors. There's what's called quid pro quo sexual harassment, which is sort of the archetypal demand for some sort of sexual attention or social attention in exchange for keeping a job, getting a promotion, getting a raise. That's a little obvious, and so it's less often what we hear about. Then the second is what truly is called a hostile work environment, where the environment is so sexualized that, you know, a reasonable person would be offended, interferes with their ability to do their work. You know, old school examples, porn on the computers, you know, off-color jokes, sexual comments directly to people.
And touching as well, right? The pinch on the rear end, or the things that maybe years and years ago people thought they could get away with, but...
Correct.
Yeah.
And those would typically, unless there's a clear, like, you know, return this contact in order to keep your job, that would be quid pro quo. The touching, the patting, the inappropriate looks all are part of the hostile work environment claim. But the other thing that's interesting that sort of comes up as people start talking about sexual harassment in the workplace more publicly is all of the other ways, and this is, I think, Mike, how you teed it up as discrimination generally, all the other ways that women are undermined in the workplace that are not necessarily sexual, but they're gender oriented.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that, just especially like with pay right now, if that comes under the sexual harassment or a broader category discrimination of women not having equal pay for an equal job being done.
So that's a whole separate beast. There actually is a federal Equal Pay Act, which provides a cause of action if women are being paid differently for equal work. Some states have taken that a step farther. Massachusetts recently passed its own version of this that expands equal work to comparable work. To pick up, you know, a school cafeteria worker and a school janitor don't do the same job. It's not equal work, but those jobs require similar qualifications. So in Massachusetts, you can now make the argument that that's comparable work. Trying to get at some of these structural wage gaps that exist in different kinds of jobs.
I was going to go back a little bit to the sexual harassment part, Emily. If somebody is feeling like, you know, I'm being sexually harassed by a coworker, or let's say there's a manager, there's a more of a tiering in the management in the company, what is their first line of reporting or working? How, you know, is it call somebody like you right away? Is there something else you should do within the organization? And also the other side of it the employer, if they feel like something is being done with, you know, some of the people that are working for them. Like, what, you know, what is your recommendation on how to handle this?
Sure. I mean, for the employee, they should immediately report it. If they have an HR department, go there. If they've got a supervisor, go there. If the supervisor's the problem, go above the supervisor. Once the company or the employer is on notice, they have responsibilities. And so on the employer side, if you know it's going on, once you know it's going on, that's when you begin to be responsible for the behavior of the people on your floor. And it's important to investigate it fairly, to preserve the confidentiality of the person who reported it, and to be really careful that you're not so aggrieved about it being reported that you end up doing something in retaliation, because the other piece of the sexual harassment laws is it's against the law to retaliate against an employee for making a report, even if your investigation concludes that there was no harassment. So from the employee's perspective, reporting it is really, really important to protect themselves from being retaliated against and to protect themselves
Let me ask two questions here. One, is there an intent requirement? So for an employer or I guess the harassment can be by an employee, but is the intent from the person who's doing the conduct, or is it the
how the other person's taking it?
The perception of how the person's receiving it. Which is the controlling component?
I would say it's not an intent requirement per se, but how the person is interpreting a gesture, an action, has to meet some indicia of reasonableness. It kind of fluctuates between an objective and a subjective standard. But if I say, can you move that chair, and you take that as a sexual advance, as long as there wasn't anything else going on, you know, that's probably not going to rise to the level of something that sustains a sexual harassment claim. But there is and there has to be room for interpretation, because things can be subtle.
You know, and this to me really speaks out about the Me Too movement, because we've gotten into some areas right now I think are, you know, without going too far into it, but are a little bit tricky, because, you know, you're hearing stories about from the male usually perspective is, well, it was reciprocal, you know, the other person, you know, had, you know, was playing along with it or was part of it, it was agreed upon, and the other person saying, no, it wasn't, you know, I was being harassed or you know, there was a problem there that I didn't agree to, you know. So there's kind of that difference about his intent, her intent, you know, what both parties were doing, and I think that gets to be really, really tricky.
Well, so you know, if you were telling off color jokes to Amy Schumer, you know, is that sexual harassment? Given you know the nature of her comedy routine.
Or if somebody laughs, like you're telling jokes, well, she's always laughing. I'm telling the jokes
right.
with a group of people, maybe it's mostly men, and there's a woman there, and I'm saying off-color jokes, and she's sitting there, and she's laughing with me. And then later she makes a claim that, you know, this is a hostile work environment, you know, with it. You know what I mean, Emily? What I'm trying to get at here, like, what do you think about that kind of situation?
Yeah, no, it's tough. And from an employer's perspective, What you have to be really careful and mindful of is a couple of things. One, the woman may be laughing because she doesn't want to create a conflict in the situation. And two, you don't know who else is listening. So, you know, from a sort of risk management and best practices perspective, you know, we tell employers to think about, just assume that that one woman in the room is the most sensitive person in the world. Is this going to be a problem? And make sure that you're creating a culture and environment that doesn't cause doubt like that. As to the reciprocal, you know, a consenting relationship, for example, it could be absolutely true. The problem is, and this will tilt into the quid pro quo kind of sexual harassment, if you've got a supervisor-supervisee relationship in the workplace and a romantic or sexual relationship between those people, it's very hard for the employer to convince people that there wasn't a power imbalance, that there wasn't some at least implicit coercion in that situation.
Now, when, I think you're absolutely right on that, Emily. There's, you know, there's, it's weighed differently in a situation like that. When, and this is for Mike too, is like, when does the line cross when it becomes criminal activity?
That, I only know enough to be dangerous about the criminal piece, but, you know, if it were forcible sexual contact, you know, if you start going into, and maybe I shouldn't just say forcible, because there's a rape claim based on lack of consent as well. That's a little outside my expertise. But
maybe that's a better one for Mike here.
What do you yes. Think? So the basic rule is if there is a unconsenting touching. The few cases that have run across my desk that kind of fall into the employment thing are generally has to do with drinking. And, you know, so a manager is out with an employee, a female, usually it's a male-female situation. There's drinking involved, and then there's some touching, and there's some real misunderstanding, at least later. And that can definitely lead to criminal charges. But for criminal charges for adults, it really does require some level of unconsented touching.
And we've had situations where a employer was duped by or manipulated potentially by an employee into, you know, claims of, I don't know how to put this delicately without revealing anything, about was led on, egged on, ultimately to try to get some money from that party.
Basically, so extorting them.
Extorting, yeah.
Now, I noticed just recently the CEO of Intel wound up resigning because he was having a relationship with an employee. Because Intel, it didn't seem like there was anything criminal about it. It was consensual, but Intel just has a blanket no fraternizing policy. And ultimately he violated that, and that's how he got fired. And I'm taking it, Emily, that you kind of recommend those kinds of black and white policies in the employment realm.
I do. I mean, there's no law against a truly consensual, non-coerced sexual relationship between coworkers. But human beings are complicated things. And relationships are complicated things, and things can go wrong in a hurry. And one can always legitimately question how truly consensual a relationship is in the environment of a workplace with a hierarchy.
Perception actually is pretty important in that scenario.
Absolutely.
Because even if the two parties don't necessarily think there's anything wrong, how it looks to the outside that someone's being favored, people are being passed over for promotions because they're not sleeping with the boss.
Right. And that particular scenario foments unhappiness sort of in a broader ripple effect than just the two people involved. Absolutely.
Okay, so Emily, we are at the break point where we have to take a minute off, so we will be back here in just a minute on Legalese, talking to Emily Smith about employment issues in the workplace.
Being accused of a crime is not to be taken lightly.
Being accused of a crime is a big deal. It doesn't matter if you're innocent or if you're guilty. There's just too much at stake for you and your loved ones. Hi, I'm Mike Chastain of the Chastain Law Office, and I've been practicing criminal defense for over 32 years, and I know what I'm talking about. My advice is don't take any chances. Before you do anything else, call me for a free consultation. We will discuss what happened and review your options. You need to know your choices so you can feel confident making the right decision. I take your concerns and your life seriously, and I want you to have the best possible outcome. Don't waste any time. Call me today for a free consultation. Call 916-932-7150. That's 932-7150. Or visit us at ChastainLaw.com. That's ChastainLaw.com for your free consultation. Let the Chastain Law Office show you the way forward. When my clients get arrested for a DUI, I want the best possible outcome for them. I always recommend the top resources available to help minimize the penalties and costs. That's why I send my clients to Your DUI Solutions, because I believe they're the best. Hi, I'm Mike Chastain, a 32-year veteran of criminal defense. If you get arrested for a DUI, don't call your insurance company. Instead, call Your DUI Solutions and avoid either getting dropped or having your rates go up significantly. DUI forgiveness can be real. You don't have to pay outrageous insurance rates for your DUI conviction. At Your DUI Solutions, they provide instant electronic SR-22s, interlock device installations, and DUI program enrollment assistance. Your DUI Solutions is there to make sure everyone is taken care of every step of the way. Visit them at yourduisolutions.com. That's yourduisolutions.com, and find out how they can save you money.
Now, back to the Legal Hour on Money 105.5 with your host, Mike Chastain.
And welcome back to Legalese. We're glad that you're joining us this morning. Good morning, Sacramento. We have been joined today by Emily Smith, an employment attorney out of Boston, Massachusetts. So, Emily, we've been talking about sexual harassment and you know, where the line is drawn. And what I walked away from was basically the idea of having clear sort of black and white rules about fraternizing between employees is probably the best way to go. Do you agree with that?
I do. I think it's the best. It's both the best protection for an employer and, honestly, you know, keep this stuff out of the workplace is a benefit to everybody who's trying to get their job done and be professionals in a professional environment.
Okay. Now, you mentioned at the top one of the misunderstandings is that there's a whether or not there's a requirement for progressive discipline for an employee who may be misbehaving. So could you talk to us a little bit about that?
Sure, sure. And, you know, speaking to employers, I absolutely think it's best practice to, both from a legal perspective and a management perspective, to make sure people know what's going on. But the progressive discipline that's laid out typically in employee handbooks does not trump the employment at will concept, which is, if I'm just sick and tired of you, as long as I'm not sick and tired of you for a discriminatory reason, I can fire you for a good reason, a bad reason, or no reason at all, and I can choose whether I want to tell you that you're in danger of being fired. There's been case law over the years, people trying to enforce employee handbooks as contracts, that is met with an almost universal lack of success. So I guess what I would say to employers, it's best practice if you can do it, but you also have to understand that if you have somebody who's just not working out and you really don't believe all the progressive discipline in the world is going to fix it, sometimes you're better protected and better served in your business by pulling off the Band-Aid rather than drawing out the process.
Yeah, I completely agree with that, Emily. And a few years back, I wasn't aware of that. And I thought legally we had to do the progressive thing and document each time that you had like a disciplinary conversation with an employee or just something if they're just not, you know, getting with the program and doing their job. So it's interesting for me with that. I think that best practice is to have something, you know, try to bring the best out of people for, you know, and coach them into being able to fulfill, you know, their the job that they're being paid for.
So just to define it, so employment at will simply means that a person can be fired for any reason or no reasons, as long as it's not a discriminatory reason. Is that right?
As long as it's not discriminatory or otherwise unlawful. There's a few other reasons you're not supposed to fire people, like for serving on a jury, for complaining about their wages, but generally, yes.
Okay. And the having an employee handbook, sort of like as they talk about the Pirates Code, it's really kind of a guideline, not really a code, right? And so it's not binding.
That's right. And you know, a well-written handbook will always say this is not a contract and we can change these policies anytime we want. To the bit about progressive discipline, here's what I would say. If you implement it regularly and equitably and across your entire workforce, it can absolutely help protect you if somebody later claims a wrongful termination. But if you dust off that handbook for the first employee you have a problem with and only do progressive discipline for that employee, it's not going to help you that much, because it's going to be pretty clear that you're just creating a paper trail for a decision that you've already made.
Okay. But you do recommend having that employers should have employee handbooks as opposed to just winging it on a case-by-case basis?
Absolutely, because to the example just before, if it's really part of your business that you're following those policies, not only is that going to avoid problems, but that truly is going to help you defend your decisions if there's ever a dispute.
Oh, excellent. Now, you also mentioned that having an employee on a salary does not necessarily exempt the person from being eligible for overtime, which may be important for some people.
This is a hugely important and expensive mistake that a lot of businesses make. In order to be exempt from overtime, you have to both be paid on a salary basis and your duties have to be exempt duties, meaning they're not going to look at the title of your job. They're going to look at what you do all day. So, for example, there's a lot of retail establishments who are facing lawsuits from assistant store managers who are salaried, but whose duties are really 80% the same as the clerks on the floor and really only in very small measure properly managerial.
Okay.
So I could talk forever about overtime exemptions and you guys would fall right asleep, but it's important to know that there's a duty function there.
So just kind of as a broad stroke, though, professional positions, so lawyers, doctors, accountants, do they tend to be salaried employees? Are they eligible for overtime, or is a general rule they're not?
So there's three buckets of exemptions: professional, which typically is a job that requires some kind of license or advanced degree; executive, which typically requires that there are actual supervisory responsibilities over two or more people, ability to hire and fire, discipline, et cetera. And then the administrative exemption, which is harder to define concisely, but tends to pick up people who are at a level where they exercise independent judgment and they're sort of ancillary to the core business. So human resources is an example. Your accounting staff is an example if they don't fit into another.
So my office manager, I could put her on salary and not have to pay her overtime. Is that
whoa? Slow down just a minute there.
You're stepping on the Amazing Miss E's toes here, Mike. I don't know if I want to answer that.
Well, I just want to make sure I don't get dragged into court.
Could happen.
If an office manager is doing that which Ms. E does, you know, truly managing things and making decisions on her own, possibly. If what you call an office manager's pinnacle of responsibility is reordering paper when the copy machine is out, probably not exempt.
Okay. All right. That sort of clarifies that for me.
Thank God. It's been great having you, Emily.
Yeah, pretty soon she's going to be wanting overtime. Can you believe that? So, well, very interesting. So, Emily, if somebody was interested in getting your book, because while it does focus on Massachusetts law, it is applicable in other states. Would that be a fair statement?
Yeah, absolutely. If, you know, it would be, I would say in other states, what I say about minimum wage in Massachusetts, you might want to check in your own state, but the basic framework, I think, is true across the country.
I tell you what, Emily, if you, when we're done here, email me the URL for your, either the website or your landing page for the book, and I'll include that on our podcast when we upload it to our website.
Oh, great. Yeah, absolutely.
Excellent. Well, Emily, thank you very much. I think it's been very informative, great information, and it's clarified a number of questions that I had about, you know, the relationship between, you know, employers and employees and some of these misperceptions. I always thought you had to have progressive discipline. So, excellent information.
All right. Well, always a pleasure.
Well, thank you again. So, we appreciate you all listening in today. It's been an excellent show. As I said, if you thought you were tuning into the Legal Hour with Mike Chastain, you were in the right place. We are now going to be the Legalese.
And we just kind of liked easing our way into the week and into Monday. And
yeah, you know, it's I think Monday is such a crucial day. Because if you get started on the wrong foot, you know, I mean, people are always bemoaning, you know, Monday being, you know, like the worst day of the week.
Yeah.
But, you know, I actually think that Monday can be the best day of the week because it's the day that you actually can get rocking and rolling.
When you set up your week.
Exactly.
You set the template, really, for the rest of the week.
Right, right. You know, and momentum is such a huge part of being productive and being successful. I think it really makes a difference. So if you know, if you kind of flip your script and say, hey, Monday is not the worst day of the week, Monday is the best day of the week, because that's the day I get to actually, you know, start moving towards whatever my goals are, whatever it is I'm trying to accomplish, it's a great way to start your week. So we will be back next Monday at 8 o'clock here on KSAC Money 105.5 with Legalese, Mike Chastain and the Amazing E. We'll see you then.